Now, we're holding on page 16 in Yuma, about four or five lines from the top, middle of Oisteslov. We're in the middle of talking about the Nisim that happened in the Bis Mikdash. We mentioned that the Jewish people were standing there very crowded in the Azara. We said Tzfufim, as in literally you had people floating off the ground, not able to touch the ground because it was so crowded. But then in Mishtachim, when it came time to bow, then they're bowing with plenty of space. So we started listing the 10 Nisim that it says in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. So we mentioned a few so far. Women never miscarried from the smell of the meat of the kodshim. The meat never spoiled. There were never any flies in the base of the b'chayim. The kohen gadol never became a balkeri on Yom Kippur. The omer, the shtei alechem, and the lechem aponim never became posel. The next one is omer tzfufim mishtachvim revachim. The next one, we said before, they would stand very crowded. And again, tzfufim, Rashi said, comes from the word tzfuf, which means floating. So you have people, literally, whose feet are floating off the ground. Or mishtachvim revachim, but we said when they come to bow, then they have plenty of space, not only because each person needs space to bow, but because you also need space around each person, so that when he's saying his personal vidui, that other people don't overhear him. The next one, v'lehizik nochesh v'akar of Yerushalayim. Snakes and scorpions never harmed anybody in Yerushalayim. So it's not that they weren't present. Snakes and scorpions are confined all over the place. But they never harmed anybody or killed anybody in Yerushalayim. So Marsha points out, now, you know, other kinds, there's many other causes of death, and the person, you, most people die because one or another of Avera of theirs. We have in Bava Basra only the rare few people in history who had no chet at all and died only because of the chet etadas. But for a person to be killed by a snake represents, in fact, that he has, that there's no other reason for him to die but the chet etadas. So therefore, they were protected against that in Yerushalayim. There are sichas where the Rebbe talks about a deeper idea in this as well, that a nachash is a symbol of Lashon Hara, as the original nachash HaKadmoni was. An akrav, where we know you have the difference between a snake's venom is hot and a scorpion's venom is cold, so it represents the kind of sinas chinam or indifference that one person might have to another. So you didn't have that in Yerushalayim. Obviously, eventually they did have sinas chinam. We said before that was why the second Bais Mikdash was destroyed, but we're talking on the whole there wasn't. And the last one was, nobody ever said to somebody else, it's too crowded for me to stay in Yerushalayim, even though everybody had to stay there. So Rashi explains, it doesn't just mean staying there for the Yom Tovim. It also meant a person is going to say, I can't make a living over here. I have two quits, too crowded. I don't have a good enough space to live in. Nobody ever felt that way. Everybody always realized that it's a privilege to live in Yerushalayim and that whatever happens as far as Parnassah happens, and nobody ever complained that they're having a hard time of it. Which one point is also, it represents the sense of bittul that they had, that I don't need more than what the Eibishter has given me. This Oymim Tzfu from Mishtachim Mervachim that I've pointed out in one of those sichas also reflects that idea. Because they're willing to be Oymim Tzfu, because they're willing to give up their own Mitzios and be crowded like that in the Mishnah, therefore they have that when it comes to Mishtachim, when they're bowing to Hashem, they're able to have more of that sense of Bittul, and therefore they have Revachim. Okay. So the Gemara says, Posach the Mikdash v'siyim b'Yerushalayim. Now on the face of it, the Mishnah starts talking about 10 Nisim that happened in the Bais Mikdash, but then a number of the ones we said were in Yerushalayim. The last few, we said about the Nachash v'Akrav, and nobody ever said it's too difficult for me to live in Yerushalayim, so that's in Yerushalayim. So what are those doing in the Mishnah? The Gemara answers, Ikot tauti acharonais of a Mikdash. Because in fact, there are two others that took place in the Bais Mikdash, which were not listed so far. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Me'olam like kibug shomim eish shal atzeh ma'arocha. The fire never put out the wood, never put out the rain, never put out the fire that was burning with the wood piles on the Mizbeah. And even though it was open to the air, there was the whole Azara in general we talked about was open to the air, but I think there are opinions that said that it was mostly roofed over, but even if it was, the area of the Mizbeach was definitely unroofed, and the rain never affected the fire. But Ashana Marocha, and the second one is, as far as the smoke from the Marocha, even if all the winds in the world come and blow on it, they wouldn't move it, they wouldn't cause the smoke to dissipate. So that those were two more nissim. Now, when we look in Pirkei Avos, we actually find those two are listed in the Mishnah. Here, when the Gemara quoted the Mishnah, it didn't have those, and it brought them from a Braisa. So Rashi on Pirkei Avos says, in fact, evidently those two don't belong in the text of the Mishnah, because we see from our Gemara over here that the Gemara had to supply them from a Braisa. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Hananel says, once the Gemara goes through the whole discussion, the Gemara is going to continue with other nissim that happen in the Beis Mikdash, which are not listed for one reason or another. Once the Gemara concludes with that whole thing, then we see that, in fact, we're meant to count of the ones we said before about that there was never a psul in the Omer and the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem upon him. Those are all, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, those all count as one nest, and therefore we have room for two more, and therefore, so like they rewrote the Mishnah to include these two that are in the Braisa over here, and thus we have the Mishnah as we have it in Pirkei Avos. Anyway, the Gemara asks the two Lecha, you're telling me there were no other Nisim other than these 10 in the Beis Mikdash? Hatoni Reb Shmaya Miklanvoy, Reb Shmaya from Klanvoy is the name of a place in Bavel. The Gemara mentions it in a different context, actually. It says that one time, one of the Chachamim stayed there overnight, and the next day when they asked him where he stayed, he says, this place, Klanvoy, and they ask him, isn't that named after the idol Nevoy, how are you allowed to say the name? And he explains the famous halacha that any idol whose name is mentioned in Tanakh, you're allowed to say the name of it. Since Nevoy is mentioned in Yeshaya and in other places in Tanakh, therefore you're allowed to say it. You have Sichas, where it ever talks about the deeper idea behind that being, once it's mentioned in Torah, then it means the whole concept of it as Avodah Zarah is bottle, and it becomes like you have it to a certain extent, it gets included in Kedusha. Anyway, the point is, this Reb Shmaya was from there. So he says, Shivrei Klei Cheres Nivloin B'mekoyim, broken pieces of earthenware were swallowed up in their place on the floor. Now, what happens is like this. The Torah tells us in Parshas Tzav that Uchli Cheres Asher Tevushal Boi, the pasuk says that if you cook a chatas and a kli cheres, the kli cheres absorbs. Eventually, those molecules of the food that it absorbed eventually becomes noser. And since you can't kasher kli cheres, so therefore you have to break them. And you have a specific din that the pasuk says over there that have to be broken. And we learn the Gemara in Zvachim has a whole discussion about it that we learn from Sukkim that it actually has to be broken in the Azara. Now, if you didn't end out, now, they didn't necessarily clear them out of the Azara. Now, Tosfos Yeshanim wonders, Taka, why not? Where do we find that they couldn't? But the assumption seems to be that they did not. So therefore, eventually, the Azara would be full of piles of broken shards. So a nest would happen, and they would get swallowed up into the ground so that they don't have that issue. Korach also got swallowed up into the ground, that's true, but here we're talking about in a positive way. Yeah. Anyway, the Omar Abaya, and Abaya says there were other things that also got swallowed up into the ground of the Azara B'derachnes. Mura v'noitza. You have the Mura and Noitza of an Oilasa Oif. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayikra that most of the body of an Oilasa Oif goes on the Mizbeach. The Kohen takes out the Mura, which is the stomach of the bird and the crop and various other parts of the digestive system, along with noitza, which either means the feathers, or either it means the feathers that are over that area, or it means the waste that's inside the digestive system. Whatever, those don't go on the Mizbeach, as it actually brings on the Pasuk over there, since birds eat from stolen food, Hashem doesn't want those parts on his Mizbeach. So instead, the Kohen takes those and throws them onto the floor near the Mizbeach, and a nest happens that they got swallowed up into the ground. Incidentally, elsewhere, the Gemara points out, the Kohenim had to be extremely strong to do that. You know, Mais and B'chol Yoyim, you throw something heavy, or something moderately heavy, you can throw it a fair distance, but you throw something light, it doesn't really go very far. And here, sometimes the distance, depending where by the Mizbeach, Kohen did the Olas Oif, he might be as much as over 30 amas away from that spot where it's supposed to land, and he would throw this Mura v'Noitza, which was very lightweight, and still it would travel 30 odd amas. So, showing the Kohenim had tremendous strength. Anyway, so that's Mura v'Noitza. The dish from Mizbeach HaPnimi, also when they cleared out the leftover oil and wicks and ashes from the Mizbeach, from the Mizbeach HaPnimi, the leftover ashes and coals from and burnt remnants of Kodesh, v'Hamenorah, and the dish of the Menorah, the leftover oil and wicks, all of those also they would place on the floor, Nivloin v'Mekoyman, all those would also be swallowed up in the place. Now, Rashi understands that the Trumas Hadeshen was also like that. Now Abaya does not have in this list over here the Trumas Hadeshen, the daily shovel full of ashes that they took off the Mizbeach. And as the Pasuk says, V'somai etzal ha-Mizbeach, Rashi over here implies that that was also swallowed up into the ground. Tosfos disagrees with that and says the fact that Abaya doesn't have it in his list means not necessarily. And Tosfos also points out on the basis of some other Gemaras, it may be that it's not so. The Gemara elsewhere talks about what happens if a person were to use those ashes, would he be committing Me'ilah? Well, if they get swallowed up into the ground, how could he be using them anyway?
Would he be committing what?
Would he be committing the Aveda of Me'ilah? Me'ilah is using something from the Beis Mikdash for your personal use. Where if a person does it b'shogeg, then he's chayev to repay Hekdesh for the value of it plus 25% and to bring a korban. And if he does it b'mezid, then he gets malchus. But elsewhere the Gemara discusses, if a person were to take these ashes that are removed from the Mizbeach and use them for some other purpose, would he be chayev for that Aveda? And as Tosef says, if they got swallowed up into the ground, then you can't use them anyway. What's the havam in it to think that you'd be able to use them? Okay, Tosef says, let's say you could say hypothetically somebody digs into the ground over there and finds some. But Tosef themselves prefers to say that no, the Dishon Mizbeach HaPnimi, the Dishon Mizbeach HaChitzen, rather, the Trumas HaDeshen, was not swallowed up into the floor, only these various things that Rav Shmaya and Abaya listed. Anyway, the point is that was a nest that all these things got swallowed up into the floor. Why aren't we listing that among the 10 nisim in the Beis Hamikdash? And the answer is very well. You could say psuli tlosahavu. You have three psulim that we mentioned before: the oimer, the shtei lechem, and the lechem aponim. We originally thought each of them counts as a separate nest. No, chashvinu kachan. Count them instead as one big thing, that all the korbanos that are being brought where there's not going to be an opportunity to bring a replacement, as we discussed yesterday, then there was a nest, they never became fossil. So therefore, after today, b'ayo today. So you take out those two, and now you have two that you can insert instead. So you can put in over there the ones about the ones about the fire and the Ashana Marocha, and you're back to 10. Well, the question is, Yehochi blew in Nami Tirei Havu. Well, in that case, then, so if you're going to say rather that like this, we said the last two on the list, the Nochash Va'akrav and the Tzarli Hamokim, we're not going to count because those were in Yerushalayim. We want to find 10 that were specifically in the Beis Hamikdash. So we're going to ignore those two. We're going to put in the two about the fire and the smoke. That brings us back to 10. Now, though, we're saying if you're going to count all the psulim as one, then you're back down to 8. Therefore, you have room for 2. The problem is, Yehochi bluin nami tirei havu, then in that case, there's two kinds of bluin. We said the shivrek, the broken pieces of klei cheres are one category, and all the various things that are bio listed, the mura v'noitza, etc., are another category. So then you have 2. Chashvinu kachad. But on the face of it, shouldn't you count them as one? If you're counting all the psulim, the oimer, the shtei alechem, and the lechem aponim as one, you should count this nest that all these various things were swallowed up into the ground, count them as one. Chosru lehu, and now you're missing one. Now you only have 9. The answer is ikanami achriti. There's another nest which we haven't listed yet. Namely, to Amr Bishrav and Levi, Nes Godol Nasa B'Lachem Aponim, a great nest happened with B'Lachem Aponim, Siluke Kisidurai. When they took it off the Shulchan, it was just as hot and as fresh as when they put it on. Now, they would bake it on Erev Shabbos, they would put it on the Shulchan on Shabbos, and then it would remain on the Shulchan for the entire week, and then they would take it off the following Shabbos and replace it with new Lachem Aponim. So it was 9 days since it had been baked, and we know famously the Ben Ish Mitzri at the end of Parshas Emor made fun of that and claimed it's impossible, but that's how it was. In fact, the Ritva points out based on the continuation of the Gemara over here that it was so hot that it would actually, you'd see steam rising off it. So even after it was sitting on the Shulchan for days. So that was a nest. As we find in the Pasuk, we find when David was on the run from Shaul, at one point he comes to Noiv Irakoyanim, and he asks Achimelech, do you have any food? And Achimelech tells him, the Kohen Gadol tells him, the only bread we have here is lechem aponim. And David says, it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, I have to eat it. And the Pasuk mentions over there, losum lechem choyim b'yom hilokhoi, to put hot bread on the day that it was taken off. Meaning, in other words, that the Pasuk is implying that when it was taken off the Shulchan, it was just as hot as when it was first put on. So that was a ness. So therefore, that's the 10th ness. But the Gemara asks the two lecha, You're telling me still there are no other ones? Is that the entire catalog of Nisim that were in the business? What about the Amr of Levi, Dovas and Masuris via Dana Mavisenu? We have the following fact as a tradition from our ancestors. Makam Oren Enim and Amida. The place of the Oren, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, did not take up space. As we know, the famous idea, Rashi mentions it over here, the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Mishkan was 10 by 10 Amos, and the Beis HaMikdash was 20 by 20. And if you would measure from the side of the Oren until that side of the room, you would find on each side, 5 Amos or 10 Amos, you would find a full space of 20 by 20 Amos, even though the Oren itself had a size, and two and a half by 1.5 by 1.5 Amos. So it took up space and didn't take up space at the same time. So that was a Nes, a famous thing that we talk about all over the place in Chassidus, that it's the ultimate example of Nimna HaNimno, is that the Eivishter is not limited by the Eivishter and the Oren, which is the closest thing of, which is the highest thing of a course in this world, does not take up space, it takes up space and doesn't take up space at the same time. Anyway, so that's a Nes also. The Amar Rabbanoi Amar Shmuel, furthermore, Rabbanoi says in the name of Shmuel, another Nes that was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Kruvim, the nest came on them, the Kruvim also stood the Derech Nest. Now, we don't mean the Kruvim on the Oren, the ones that were originally on the Oren that Betzalel made. What we mean is, the Psukim described in Malachim that Shlomo HaMelech had built giant Kruvim, much larger than the ones on the Oren. They were 10 Amos tall, and they had rings. Each ring was 5 Amos across. Now, the Pasuk goes on to describe that the Kodesh HaKadoshim there was 20 by 20 Amos, and they placed the Kruvim such that you had one Kruv with its rings outstretched like this, 5 Amos plus another 5 Amos. The next one, the same thing. The total width is 20 Amos, but where is there room for the bodies of the Kruvim? If each ring is 5, and 5 times 4 is 20, then there's no room in 20 Amos for the bodies of the Kruvim, so they had to stand the Derech Nes. The truth is, the Gemara in Bava Basra actually says not necessarily. They could have been placed on a diagonal, the Gemara says over there. They could have been, and then you have more room. It could be, for example, that the wings were behind the bodies rather than sticking out from the sides of the bodies. The Gemara does mention a few possibilities over there, but nevertheless, here the Gemara is taking it as a given that none of those terutzim are valid, and in fact, the Kruvim, the bodies of the Kruvim existed b'derech nes. Anyway, why aren't we counting those missing? The answer is Nisid de Baroi Kachoshiv, Nisid de Gavoi Loi Kachoshiv. Because we can say the list of the 10 Nisim is only including things outside in the Azora, things that everybody could see, not things that are inside where nobody can see them. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, nobody can go in there except the Kohen Gadol, Yom Kippur, and the occasional workman, so therefore nobody sees these Nisim. But the Gemara asks, well, Lachem Afonim Nami Nisigad Gavoyu, isn't the Lachem Afonim also a nest on the inside? Because again, not everybody goes into the Hekel. Now, Marsha says, the Gemara could have answered very simply, Gavoy means specifically the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Baroi, meaning the outside, would be everything outside of that. Because even though it's true, not many people go into the Hekel, the fact is, you have Kohenim going in there every so often to do the Avodah. So the Gemara could have answered that, but instead the Gemara is going to give a better answer. The answer is Lechem Aponim Nami Nisi de Baroyu. You should know the Lechem Aponim is considered a nest that takes place outside, namely that everybody could see it. The Omer of Shimon Levi, and we know that based on the following background. The Omer of Shimon Loch. My Dichtiv ala Shulchan HaTohar. The Pasuk says you have to place the Lechem Aponim on the Shulchan, which is Tohar. So what do you have to say? Tohar? Tohar, Meklal, Shul Tomei. The word Tohar implies that it could become Tomei, because it's Mekabel Tumah. The question is, why would it be Makabel Tumah? Kli Eta Osu V'Nachasu. Isn't the Shulchan a wooden keli that's meant to stay in one place? V'chol Kli Eta Osu V'Nachas Eina Makabel Tumah V'chol Tzitz Mifnei Tumah. Such a keli is not Makabel Tumah, because if it was movable and it's meant to have things on top of it, then it would be Makabel Tumah. But the Shulchan is meant to stay in one place with the load of Lachem Aponim on it. The fact that it has a metal plating is neither here nor there, because the metal plating is bottled to the Shulchan, so the metal plating is not going to make it able to be Makabel Tumah. So such a keli is not Makabel Tumah, and in fact, the Chotzitz B'fnei Tumah. In fact, it blocks Tumah from going from one place to another. Hypothetically, if you had something that's Tomei underneath the Shulchan, and there was something else on top of the Shulchan, that whatever was on top would not become Tomei, because the Shulchan, being an Oyel, would block it from going through. So why does the Pasuk have to say HaShulchan HaTohar, implying that it's able to be Makabel Tumah? So Elam Lamach Magbian Osai or Marin Lachim Aponim Lo'ola Regalim. That this teacher, that the Kohenim would lift it up on each of the Sholosh Regalim, and they would show it to the Ola Regalim. But Umim Lahem, and they would tell them, Ruuchi Baskam Lifnei Amakim, look how precious you are to Hashem. Shishlukei Kisidure, that the Lachim Aponim is when it's taken off the Shulchan, is just as fresh as when it's put on. Shenema Losim Lachim Chaim B'yem Hilakai, the pasuk that we quoted before. So the point is, therefore, the Lachim Aponim can be considered. The fact that it remained hot can be considered a nest on the outside, and therefore it does belong in the list of 10. How would they show them? So obviously the regular people can't touch Lachim Aponim. They might make it tame. That brings the ritzvah to say the point that they would actually see steam rising off it, and that way they'd see that it's still fresh and hot. One point is, you know, if the Yom Tov comes out on Shabbos, then fine, they don't really need that. They can see the Kohenim eating the Lachim Aponim after it's been on there for a week, and they can still see that they're still eating it and it's fresh. But most Yom Tovim don't come out on Shabbos, and you can only take off the Lachim Aponim and put it on Shabbos. Therefore, they couldn't just pick up the Lachim Aponim to show them. They'd have to pick up the whole Shulchan. But once the Shulchan is meant to be picked up with the bread on it, now it becomes more. Where do we learn b'chlal that wooden kalim are able to be makabel tumah? We learn the pasuk mentions them clay eights. In connection with them, pasuk mentions a number of other materials, and one of them is suk, a sack. A sack is able to be makabel tumah. I once heard a joke, by the way, that must have been the last word that was said before the languages were scrambled at the Tower of Babel, because you see you have that same identical word in so many different languages. What do we learn from that? In order for a Kli 8 to be Makabel Tumah, it has to be similar to a sack, in the sense that a sack is something you can carry it around empty, or you can fill it with things and carry around. Therefore, a Kli 8 has to be something that you can carry around with things on it, or put it in one place with things on it, and then it's Makabel Tumah. So only because you're lifting up the Shulchan every so often is it Makabel Tumah, and therefore the Pasuk stresses that point by calling it a Shulchan Atom.
How heavy was the Shulchan
Agam? How heavy was the Shulchan? I don't think it says. It says dimensions of it, and it says dimensions of it, and that it was plated with gold. I don't think it says anywhere.
One each one of four of them, or what?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, we just said before the Kohenim were very strong, so maybe four Kohenim would be enough to lift it. Maybe they needed more. I don't know. I don't think it says one way or the other. Okay.
What was it made out of?
It was made out of wood. It was made out of Atish Shittim, Shittim wood, and plated with gold. But then on top of it, you had the Lechem Aponim. Now, the Lechem Aponim alone were made of two Shnei Asurinim Yiyah Chalah Ha'echas. So they're made out of 24 Isarin of flour. And Isarin is a Shiur Chalah, somewhere between 3 and 5 pounds. So all the Lechem Aponim, the Lechem Aponim alone, then the 12 of them weighed something on the order of 50 to 60 pounds. But then you have to add the Shulchan itself. Yeah, I don't know how heavy the whole thing was. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues and points out there were other nisim in the Beis Hamikdash that we have not yet listed. In particular, Omer of Oshia, B'shar Shabana Shloimeh Beis Hamikdash, when Shloimeh first built the Beis Hamikdash, not by kol minim godim shal zahav, he planted over there all kinds of delectable trees made out of gold. So he had there were golden ornaments of trees on the walls as described in the Pesukim, but he had, so there were many different kinds of trees depicted over there. Vohimitzi and Perisei and Bizmanim. These trees, Bederach Nes, would produce fruit in the appropriate time. Whatever kind of tree was drawn over there would actually produce fruit in the season when such trees, when such regular trees produce fruit. When the wind would blow on these golden trees, noshrim, then the tree, then the fruit would fall off the same way as it does from regular trees. Shenema yirash kalavonin piryo, as the pasuk mentions in Tillim, the fruit of it will rustle like the levonin. Levonin is a nickname for the Beis Hamikdash because malbin avanisayim shal Yisrael whitens and cleans up the averus of the Jewish people. So we're saying that there were peris, the piryo, there were fruits over there that yirash, they rustle in the wind and they fall off. The Gemara mentions this later on in the Masechta as well, and it mentions the Kohenim would collect those golden fruits, and they would sell them and earn a parnasa that way. That way they had an extra source of parnasa, the Derech Nes. Then when the enemies entered the Heichel, Yavish, then those trees dried up. So Shenemar, as we find a pasuk, Uferach Levonin Umlal, the flowers of Levonin are miserable. Umlal basically means weakened or miserable or something. So again, Levonin referring to the Beis Mikdash, so it means that eventually these blossoms and fruits of Levonin eventually became Umlal, eventually were cut off. In other places in Midrashim, it says to be exact, it wasn't when the enemies entered the Heichal, as in when the Babylonians or the Romans or whatever, but rather it means when, in a different Midrash, it says when Menashe brought Avodah Zarah into the Heichal towards the end of the first Beis Mikdash. Anyway, in the future, Hashem will restore that. Shenemar, as we find another pasuk about the fruit of Levonim, it'll blossom and it'll be happy. It'll be happy and joyful. The glory of the Levonim will be given back to them, meaning, again, Levonim meaning the Beis Mikdash. So that glory of these golden trees that produce fruit will exist again. So we're saying they were gold. That's what we're saying. They were golden forms of trees. They were golden forms of trees, and they produced golden fruit. So the Koyanim, now Marsha points out later in the Masechta, given that they're made out of gold, regular fruits, you can look at them and you know when they're ripe and they're ready to pick. Golden fruits, you can't really know when they're ready. Therefore, they'd have to wait until the wind blew them off the tree, and then only then would they be able to call. Only then do they know like they're ripe and ready to go and sell them.
A little hard on the teeth, though, isn't it?
Well, it doesn't mean they ate them. The point is they sold them. They could sell them to people who wanted the gold or who wanted some golden ornaments in their house, and then they could buy actual food with it. The point is that was in... So they were all over the Beis Mikdash, apparently. So in the Beis Mikdash... So inside the Azara, inside the Heichal, so the Psukim in Malachim mentioned that all around the walls of the Heichal, there were figures of... in relief on the wood, you had the walls of the Beis Mikdash are built out of stone. Then on top of the stone, you have a layer of wood because Rashi mentions in a number of places you can't plate gold directly on stone. It doesn't stick. So therefore, they'd have a layer of wood. On that layer of wood, all over the place, they had in relief, they had sticking out, they had images of kruvim and palm trees and other such things. So here we're talking about those, and in the Pashtos, I guess we're talking about other ones in various other places in the Beis Mikdash. We're saying over here, kol minei megadim, so it wasn't just palm trees, it was other kinds of trees as well.
What's it called when it's engraved in? What's the word for that?
Engraved in would be that it's in, what was the word? There is a word, what? No, I mean, one word for it is incuse, but there's another word for it. One word for it in English is incuse. There's another word for it also, which I don't know, engraved, I guess you'd say. But here it wasn't engraved, just the opposite, it stuck out. Right, so I don't remember what the words for them are. Boilet is the one, so is the one, the name for ones that are sticking out. The vokuk or shakua, I guess, or whatever would be the word, would be the ones that are incised in, yeah, that are sunk in. Anyway, but here they actually stuck out of the walls, but yeah. Anyway, the point is that was a nes. So the Gemara ends up continuing to discuss this point of which nisim exactly belong in the list and others and which one don't. The Gemara ends up saying that the rule is nisim that are like a property of the thing itself. The Gemara calls them nisi dikvi are not listed. For example, this stuff we're saying that Oren was Einam and Amida. We're not counting it, not like we said before, because it's a nes inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim and nobody sees it, but because it's a property of the actual Oren itself. As opposed to the nisim that we're talking about, were things that constantly happen again and again. Whenever there was a pregnant woman around, she never had a problem because of craving the meat of the kodshim and miscarrying because of it. Whenever there was meat left over of the kodshim, it never spoiled, etc. So therefore, those are the kind of nisim we're listing, things that happen over and over again, rather than things where you have a certain object in the Beis Mikdash that has certain properties. So that explains ultimately how we come to have the list in Pirkei Avos that we do, which includes the list that we said before, plus a couple of the ones from the Braisa.
These golden fruits at all were only available for the Kohanim, right?
They were only available for the Kohanim, yeah. So for Pashtos, I guess you could understand they were in the Heichal, where only Kohanim have a right to go anywhere. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Now we said before, Vashana Marocha, we said the smoke, one of the Nisim in the Beis Mikdash then, was that the smoke of the Marocha was never dispersed by the wind. The question is, when we have an Oshan Ma'arocha, was there smoke there in the first place? But Hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hey Dvarim Nemru Be'esh Ma'arocha. There are five special things that were said about the fire of the Ma'arocha in the Beis Mikdash. Revutzakari, number one, it crouched there like a lion. So Rashi explains that actually in Shlomo's times, when the Pesukim mentioned in Divrei Hayomim that a fire came down onto the Mizbeach, what it was is actually a giant coal, a giant piece of charcoal came down from Shemayim, and that was the fire on the Bais Mikdash. And it was in the shape of a lion, so therefore the fire itself was in the shape of a lion. Marsha points out that this mikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, who comes from Shevet Yehuda. And Shevet Yehuda is compared to a lion, Gur Yehuda. That's why it was in the shape of a lion. Uborah Tachama, the second thing is it was clear like the light of the sun. It wasn't, Marsha points out, what it is the fire that we're talking about that was on the Ma'arocha, that was on the Mizbeach, was not the regular kind of fire that we're familiar with, which is a mixture of various kinds of elements. There's an essential yisoid of fire, and that was the fire on the Mizbeach. So that explains a number of the properties of it that the Gemara is saying over here. It was clear, like the fire, like the of the sun, because the sun is also the has the essence of yisoid ha'esh. It doesn't have the kind of combination of elements that make a fire that we're familiar with. The yesh b'mamish, there was a substance to it, meaning not only the coal obviously had a substance, but the flame had an actual substance. You could actually touch it. In other words, and it had like we have by the darkness in Mitzrayim, where it says it had a substance to it, it had a mamoshus to it. So here, the flame had a mamoshus to it. Again, with this idea being that it was this essential element of fire. But it tells us Latin kivation, it would consume moist things as easily as dry ones, which means, for example, you have limbs of the korbanos that are put on it, which are full of blood and juice and whatever, and they would burn as easily as dry things. It also means if the wood itself wasn't completely dry, then it would still burn just as easily. It means, for example, the Gemara discusses in a few places, you can have a person could decide that he wants to give as a nedava, he wants to give as a korban wine all by itself. Now, wine from the nesachim that came with various korbanos was poured into the little bowls that you had on top of the mizbeach. Wine that a person brought as a separate korban of its own was actually sprinkled on the fire. And the Gemara deals with the question, wouldn't that be putting out the fire? And the answer is that it's fine because it's only a temporary thing and it's being done with shame in order that it'll burn more. But he was saying the fire from the first Bais Mikdash, you wouldn't even have that kind of thing. It would consume the liquid wine just as easily as it would solids. The Enamala Oshan, and the fifth one is it wouldn't produce smoke. So what smoke are we talking about before that there was a nest that the wind wouldn't disperse it? The answer is Kikamun and Vidahedya. Yes, but what we're talking about is there was also fire on the Bais Mikdash that was brought from Hedya. The Kohenim themselves had a mitzvah to light a fire over there. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pesuk says "Venosnu bnei Aaron a Kohen Eish," that the Kohenim should put fire on the Mizbeach, that means Afapi Sheish Yodedis Min Hashemayim, even though fire was coming down from Shemayim, mitzvah lahavi min a Hedya. There's still a mitzvah to put regular fire over there. As like you have, there's a Sirusa del Eilof Mashem, but we have to reciprocate with the Sirusa del Asata. So therefore, that fire has the regular properties of fire, and a regular fire produces smoke. So that's what we're saying, though there was a nest with that smoke that the wind never dispersed in. So if you want to ask, Revutzakari, you're telling me that the fire on the Mizbeach was crouched there looking like a lion, he says, I saw that it was sitting there on top of the Mizbeach, and it looked like a crouching dog. The answer is, Loikasha, Hob Mikdashish, and Hob Mikdashay. In the first Bais Mikdash, it looked like a lion. In the second Bais Mikdash, it looked like a dog. Which, the idea being, Maharsha says, after all, who sponsored the building of the second Bais Mikdash? Kodesh, the king of Persia. And the Persians have a certain comparison to dogs. We actually find in a pasuk in Nehemiah, where Nehemiah is speaking to the king of Persia in his time, and the Gemara says, Vashegal Yesheva Setzloi, he has Shegal sitting next to him, where the Gemara explains that means his pet dog. So there's a certain association between them and dogs. In fact, also the Abarbanel points out another thing. Kodesh is actually so called because that's the Persian word for a dog. And there's a story about him that he was abandoned as an infant and raised and nursed by a dog. Similar, like you have other legends like that about other famous historical figures. So there was just a story about him that he was raised by a dog, and therefore they gave him the name Kodesh. So therefore there's a certain connection between the Persians and dogs. The Zohar also talks about that the lion in the first Beis Hamikdash represents a much higher level of Kedusha, and in the second Beis Hamikdash because they had so much lower of a level than therefore, yeah. They're also connected to the bear. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "Well, Mikdash Sheni Mi Havi? You're telling me B'chlal there was a fire in Hashemayim in the second Beis Hamikdash? What does it mean in the pasuk? The Navi Chagai says to the people at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, Alu ha-hor v'aveisim eitzuv nu ha-bayis, go up to the mountain, bring wood so we can build the Beis Hamikdash. The Eretz Aboy, and Hashem says, I will desire the Beis Hamikdash. The Ekovda, and I will be honored in it, Amar Hashem. And the Korin and the Ekov done. Now we have a Kriyuk Siv over there. It's written without the hay, so it's as if it said the Ekov Vei, but we read it the Ekov done. So what is it? So the hey, Maishna, the Mechusir hey, why is it missing a letter hey? Elo hey, Dvarim, Shiesh, Ben Mikdash Rishon, Mikdash Sheni, because there was five things that were different between the first and the second Beis Hamikdash. The Elohein, Oren, Kaporis, and Kruvim, those all count as one. The Oren, together with the Kaporis and together with the Kruvim, was hidden away at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, we'll talk about in more detail later in the Masechta. Eish, the fire on the Mizbeach, Ushchina, they didn't have the Shchina, people didn't have Nevuah. The last Nevuah was in the second year of Daryavish, which is the year that they started building the Beis Hamikdash. There is actually a pasuk in Zechariah that mentions one Nevuah of his in the fourth year of Daryavish. So one possibility is that was a one-time thing. They needed a special question from Hashem, so therefore one last time Hashem gave Zechariah Nevuah. But other than that, no. V'ruach HaKodesh, and the Ruach HaKodesh that made the Ruach HaKodesh Urim V'Tumim. So the Urim V'Tumim didn't work in the second Beis Hamikdash. So there's a machlokas about that, by the way. Tosfos discusses, is the Urim V'Tumim the name of Hashem that was inside the Choshen, and then we're saying they didn't have that at all, or did they have to have it? Because it's part of the actual Choshen, but it didn't work. It didn't cause the letters of the Choshen to light up. Whatever the case, the point is we're saying there was no Eish Min HaShemayim in the second Beis Hamikdash. The answer is Amri. The answer, Ein, Mehava Havu. There was a fire, Siyue, Hu Delo Messiah, but unlike in the first Beis Hamikdash, where it actually helped to burn up the Korbanos, in the second Beis Hamikdash it did not. The only fire that was actually burning the Korbanos was the Eish Min HaHedyet, and the fire Min HaShemayim was just there to show that this is the Beis Hamikdash and it's the place of the Shechina, but it didn't actually help to consume the Korbanos, and therefore we can say it's as if it didn't exist. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chaf Gimel Cheshven. In Tanya, it talks about that all the Giluyim that will be lost in Lava all depend on Ma'aseinu V'Avodaseinu that we do during the time of Golos. So now, in general, we have our Avodah brings the Gola. You also have the concept of Midah Keneged Midah. So what Avodah is it that we do that brings about Tefias HaMesim? First of all, in general, when you do a mitzvah, you're taking the Gashmias of the world, which is associated with death, because every Gashmiastic thing eventually dies and decays, and you're making it something Kedusha of Kedusha, where Kedusha is eternal, so that brings to Tefias HaMesim. And number two, the whole concept of Avodah Sabirurim is, you have sparks of Kedusha that fell from the original level, and you're restoring them to where they belong. Now, the Zohar has an expression, Man denofel mi darge ikri nis. When somebody falls from their high level, then they can be called dead. So in that sense, these sparks of Kedusha are in a certain sense dead, having fallen from their level, and when we restore them to where they belong in Kedusha, then we're doing Tres HaMesim with them. Yeah. Okay. Finishing up with the halachas of traveling on a ship on Shabbos. So we talked about that you have the din that if you go into the ship on Erev Shabbos and wait there until dark, then you're allowed to board the ship on Shabbos. The Alter Rebbe actually says that really in principle that should be osur, but the minhag has become to be makel on that kind of thing. In particular, though, he mentions that if you're going on the ship, for example, in order to daven with a minion or some other mitzvah like that, and it's also going and there are goyim on board the ship as well, then there's more of a heter for it. Either way, though, if the ship is traveling exclusively for Jews, then there's no heter at all, because then all the malacha that they're doing is for Jews, and that's no good.